Hi, this is Elizabeth Grayson, Amanda from Highlander. Check out my new young adult novel called Chilly. It's out in ebook right now on Amazon and all the other platforms out there in the world. Check it out. It's a romantic fantasy, and I'd love for you to read it. You are listening to the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to episode 25 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we cover all things Highlander, including guest interviews, movies, TV shows, books, audiobooks, anime, games, special events, and a turbulent spin-off series, and more. I'm Kevin, one of your Blood of Kings hosts. However, I don't do this alone. I need my fellow mortal brother, and fellow Highlander aficionado, and fellow Star Wars geek, and fellow Star Trek geek. With me is my co-host, Norman. Welcome, Norm.
I appreciate the William Shatner dramatic pauses in your delivery. So thank you very much for that. the
strange. How are you, man?
I'm good. 25. We are a quarter of the way to 100.
That's right. Now, that's not counting our Kingmaker episodes or our fandom flashbacks, so yeah.
That's true. We're a little closer to that, but officially on the docket for Blood of Kings, we are episode 25. That's great. And thank you, everyone, for listening and supporting our show.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone on Blood of Kings, too. Just the feedback and the participation. Love the participation, man.
Should I do this entire show as William Shatner? I can do it.
No. Yeah. I know you can. Go ahead. Give me a little bit. Do me a favor. Do William Shatner, but as Mythos.
I didn't kill 10. I didn't kill 50. I killed 1,000. I killed 10,000. And I was good at it. And it wasn't for vengeance. It wasn't for greed. It was because I liked it. Mm-hmm. How's that?
I was so hoping you would do that monologue, yes. Mythos monologue. That was great.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone.
Oh, man. Gosh. All I can do right now, I've been practicing this Saw Gerrera from Rogue One impression. That's what I've been doing. And Camille's been digging it. And
nice.
I've been doing it with some friends of mine. So, but that's the only impression I can do. I can't do any more right now.
William Shatner is a man. It's a difficult thing, but.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, dude, I'm really excited about this year because Highlander is not going away.
Nope.
We've got the comic book series that's coming out. Announcement, we've mentioned before, of the new Highlander reboot with the John Wick director. And, dude, the 20th anniversary of the Highlander TV series.
Yeah.
With, as teased by John Mosby, something happening in the fall with a type of Highlander gathering. Dude, I'm excited.
Let me correct you there. This is the great John Mosby.
I'm sorry. The great John Mosby. Yes. My bad, John. don't unfriend me, please.
You're right. It's really an interesting time for Highlander because, and I don't want to say this lightly, but we really are kind of like the fandom, like the, what are like the little engine that could, like the little fandom that could. We're not as big as the major fandoms out there, like your Star Wars and Star Trek and Harry Potter and what's the vampire one that I don't like?
Oh, Twilight.
Yeah, Twilight, but that's a big fandom. I mean, these are large fandoms, but I have to credit Highlander fandom by staying alive through the passion of the fans. There are so many passionate fans out there, fans that do what we do, the rewatchers guys that do the podcasts and, you know, the fan film guys, you know, like Jeremy Orr and Derek. They do Dark Places and The Watcher. And, you know, there's so much love out there for Highlander. And I love the fact that the fans just want to keep it alive. And they kept it alive to the point where the property was given a second look. And now we have the potential for a reboot with, how do you pronounce his name? Is it Chad Stahelski?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's the John Wick 2 director.
Yeah, if you watch the special features of the John Wick Blu-ray, you can check that out. But what I'm curious about, and it goes back to that interview on our first episode with Abramowitz, because remember he teased that he was working with an Australian production company to bring a Highlander type of musical stage play to the forefront.
Right.
Where this Highlander John Wick director kind of thing came in, is it the 30th anniversary, or is it the fandom in general, like us and Highlander Rewatch and all the other fandom kind of coming out of the woodwork a little bit more? Is it the 30th anniversary? What do you think got on the radar, or is this something that maybe was on the radar before we even started throw our hats into the ring?
I have a theory about that, but I'm a little famished right now, so I need something to eat. I definitely need something to drink.
Well, what do you say we continue this conversation? We head on over to Joe's.
I think that's a good idea.
All right, let's head on over. All right. There's old Joe. It looks like he's playing a Les Paul this time.
Is it possible that you could order any more cheese?
I'm sorry, bro. You know I like my cheese.
I know you like your cheese.
No, I like my... Got some mozzarella going on right now.
Wait a second.
Mozzarella cheese fries on top of cheddar, dude. Yeah.
Wait, so at one point in time was loaded cheese fries. Another point in time was cheese quesadilla. And another point in time was grilled cheese. Now it's mozzarella sticks.
Yeah.
Or is it mozzarella sticks? Mozzarella sticks are good. Jesus. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah. And I decided to go with, I don't know if you've been to any theaters, but Seacouver's got these AMC theaters that have these awesome soda machines where you can put any flavoring into any type of those sodas.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. My favorite is like the raspberry. You can add raspberry to anything. And oh, that's so good. And so when I head over to the Seacouver Multiplex over there, that's what I get. And I got a refill after I saw La La Land and came over here and just brought it to Joe's. Joe's doesn't mind. You know, he knows I pay up on the cheese. So
so we pay our bill on time, or kind of almost on time, and we run a tab. That's just what we do. He hasn't gotten rid of that sign yet. The sign that says reserved for Michael Christian, even though Michael Christian is dead.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that, man.
I'm a big fan. Are you a fan?
I'm a huge fan. I am a huge Michael Christian fan. I'm almost thinking like maybe we need to put it on a shirt sometime.
The official Michael Christian fan club shirt.
Yeah.
That might happen.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. I think Redbubble can do something like that for us.
Okay, so I want to continue this conversation we had outside. Let's bring it inside. About your theory about the resurrection of Highlander. Now, we like to think it's because of us. You know, we dove into the podcasting pool and planted our flag, as well as several others, and did our Facebook page, and as you know, joined many other Highlander related Facebook pages, and we got this kind of tight community going on. The powers that be are putting the motion into the movie and the comic book now. Where do you think it happened? You said you have a theory. Share it with us.
Well, I don't think that Highlander as a property, as an IP, has ever gone away. I think in the realm of science fiction and fantasy, Highlander is always there. It may not be at the top of fandom, but I think it's always there in just this through-line narrative of fandom. And I think that when production companies are mining properties, and that's kind of like, you know, what's the fashionable thing to do nowadays. And you're seeing a lot of reboots and remakes, and we're taking a look at licenses that can be refreshed. I think that Highlander today has a really strong chance of making a complete resurrection with just the aspect of the lore. The interesting thing about it is that how do you do Highlander? Okay, that was in 1986, you know, it was 31 almost years ago. How do you do that in a modern day where you know, social media is the prevalent narrative of the time. Can you imagine what the Watchers would have at their disposal today? Or what, you know, or like, say, for instance, Connor McLeod was fighting Iman Fazil. Okay, let's take it all the way back to 86. Connor McLeod was fighting Iman Fazil in the parking lot of the Madison Square Garden. And someone was hanging out in their car and they were filming this a la Blackmail, the Lyman Curlow episode with Anthony DeLongis. Yes, I'm flexing my Highlander knowledge because I'm that awesome.
Nice.
Yes, yes. But that's the thing. You know, everyone has a smartphone. Everyone has a way to record video. Everyone has a way to share this instantly on the interwebs. How does Highlander translate to that today?
Well, what's interesting is we touched on that in episode two with when we had the John Mosby.
That's true.
The one and only John Mosby talk about
the great John Mosby.
The great John Mosby. Right. Talk about what we'd like to see from Highlander. And that was one of the things we brought up. And I think one of the suggestions that I personally would like to see is that the quickening or the immortal buzz does something to disrupt nearby electronics, you know, and definitely a quickening would like shoot off like a mini, you know,
an EMP
type of thing, you know? So, but that's the cool thing about, this is the stuff you get to write because the Highlander shot nowadays has to evolve.
Right.
And, you know, also, you know, I would like to see, obviously we touched about what would happen with the bodies. Maybe the bodies disappear and, you know, get, you know,
like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, they just like turn into ash. Or
yeah. Or
like
they
that.
Just become part of the quickening. They get eaten up by the quickening and then, you know, absorbed by the winter, you know, but yeah, man. So there's definitely going to be those challenges, and I'm excited to see how they're going to do that. I just hope that if they do use the movie, I would love to see another TV series launch, something that we could look to week to week. I would love, don't get me wrong, beggars can't be choosers. I would love a movie, and if a sequel would be involved, but I would love for them to have the opportunity to turn it into a franchise and then maybe shoot it off into another TV series, because that would be great.
Can I admit something?
Yeah.
I want to admit how awesome it is, how passionate you get about Highlander while I'm eating my freaking nachos. Dude, you're going off right now, man. I love it.
I am, dude. I'm in my happy place right now. I love this. Hey, so we want to give our listeners a reminder that we're wrapping up the Blood of Kings Highlander 2 giveaway. We want you to share your thoughts on Highlander 2, whether you like it or not. If you do like it, or if our episode had an impact on your opinion, we'd like to know that as well. First time you saw it, share your story. Send us audio, video on Blood of Kings or something. We'd love to do that. We'll get you in on the prize, which is a Blood of Kings t-shirt and a sealed copy of the DVD, the special edition Renegade version that we highlighted and promoted on our episode of Highlander 2, our two-part episode, the retrospective, and, of course, the Reitzel Renegade commentary. So make sure you get in on that. And we just wanted to do a reminder of the Sword Experiences that are announced on the Sword Experience website. We also wanted to thank the people that did share their Sword Experiences on Blood of Kings. April 8th, 2017, Salem, Oregon. Salt Lake City, March 17th. And September 2nd in Sacramento, California. And I know there will be many more coming throughout the rest of the year as well. I think Adrian's going to be one busy guy.
It's getting bigger, isn't it?
Yeah, he's putting on a good show. Yeah. And it's just a fun thing to be part of. And what's interesting, too, one thing I don't think I mentioned when I was doing the 30th anniversary wrap-up, I was talking to some of the Adrian Angels and some of the other fans that have done it more than once. It's kind of addicting.
It is.
From what I've heard.
No, it is. And I remember Adrian saying that there are going to be points allocated to how you attend your future sword experiences and retroactively. There's going to be a points program, and those points program points are going to be able to be cashed in for special rewards. I remember him saying that online, so that'll be interesting to see. Like if you get so many points, do you actually get to meet him or hang out with him or go to a sword experience for free, you know, la gratis, but we'll see.
Well, my one, I'm still struggling with one thing from the aftermath of my sword experience is how to display my boken. And I don't have a lot of space because I have so much crap of other collectibles and DVDs and movies and signed cards. I gotta display that signed boken, and I'm really proud of that. So I gotta figure out a way to do that. So.
When the time arises, it will speak to you.
This is true.
If you build it, you will mount it.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of the Blood of Kings, what's happening? I want to talk about a post that I did. I love old school media. I still own a VHS player. I actually own more than one. I own several because in case one breaks or whatever. So I have old VHS media. And the reason why I do is because, and this is a episode I'll probably do on the Fandom Podcast Network, a lot of VHS releases of TV shows and movies never made the jump to DVD.
This is true.
Therefore, there is a lot of lost movies that may or may not ever make it to Blu-ray, digital, whatever. And it's funny trying to find some of these on eBay. They're quite expensive. And so I'm a huge fan. I would die to have a working Betamax player with the original Highlander on Betamax. I would love that. But what I do have, I have two working Laserdisc players, and I have been collecting Laserdiscs. And you can find some of them pretty cheap, under $20 here and there. Some are a little bit harder to find, especially if they're limited editions, like the Star Wars collections. There's a couple of different versions of those.
I had the Blue Box version at one time.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good one.
But the thing that I love about Laserdisc is it's like picking up an old album cover because you get these great pictures and these great covers. And, you know, I have seen all of these movies in perfect HD. So I don't need to see them in HD all the time. I don't mind. There's a certain warm feeling that I get watching something on VHS or DVD even, or even now on Laserdisc. I know these movies like the back of my hand, but seeing them in these formats brings back a certain warm, comfy feeling that I've always enjoyed. But what's great about these Highlander Laserdiscs, and I want to talk about one specifically. And actually, our friend of the show, Aaron Gill, turned me on to this because when I started talking about him on Facebook in Blood of Kings, there was a 10th anniversary Highlander director's cut. It had a black cover with the McLeod Claymore kind of shooting up through the Highlander logo. And it's the deluxe widescreen collector's edition.
It's a gorgeous cover. Gorgeous cover.
Yeah. It's really cool because it actually has some great special features on here. And it has a new state-of-the-art, at the time, digital transfer and the original theatrical trailer. But it's also got a great running audio commentary by director Russell McKahey and producers Peter Davis and William Panzer. Hmm. And this is an older version. But the cool thing about it is that it includes hundreds of behind-the-scenes photos, productions, and publicity stills, and photos from scenes left on the editing room floor, including there's a separate kind of love scene or with Connor and with Brenda. And also there's the bar scene with Castagir and Connor and the police officer. I'm forgetting his name.
Bedso.
Yes. But of course, the famous Young Dal Kim scene with the fight with the Kurgan.
Right.
And the images that they show there are the ones that were used on the Highlander CCG trading cards.
Right.
But what's really great is you also get to see the script that was that accompanied that, because they were left on the cutting room floor. Those, you cannot find those anymore. So you have to go by the stills. And I did want to share the last bit of that that script as Kurgan is about to kill Young Dal Kim, because Young Dal Kim has given up. And it says, "Kurgan, I will give you peace." And he raises his sword. "There can be only one." He cuts off Kim's head. A shimmering energy flashes between the corpse and Kurgan. He starts to glow. Computer screens explode from nowhere. A terrifying wind starts blowing. Papers fly. Water coolers crash to the floor. The window explodes, sucking Kim's body out into space. It falls 40 floors.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
And it's funny, too, because I don't have the original remote control to my my LaserDisc player, so I had to like use the little forward thing very carefully, and it kind of would go a little bit too fast sometimes. But it is a beautiful two LaserDisc set here. And it's also got this great virtual 3D photograph of the Kitanosaur that just kind of spins.
Right, right.
It's really, really cool. Now, not to be outdone, putting my love out there on Blood of Kings for these LaserDiscs, our friend of the show, Jill Burdickus, who was at the 30th anniversary, got to meet her. We interviewed her, recorded her interview. Very sweet lady. Lives in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that there is Yahoo auctions that still exist in Japan?
Surprises me. Yeah.
I guess this was a thing back in the day. Well, in Japan, they use these, and it's probably cheaper than using eBay because eBay rates are so expensive with all the fees they charge. She found the Highlander original cut, Highlander 2, The Quickening, and Highlander 3, The Sorcerer.
The Sorcerer, yes.
The Sorcerer, yep. Yes. Japanese editions. And she found them as an auction all sold together, and she bought them for me and then shipped them over to me.
How are the quality on those? Were they mint?
Quality, oh, yes. Mint.
Awesome.
Great condition on these things. And, you know, of course, I can't understand any of the wording on the back because it's in Japanese.
Yeah, but it looks cool.
But the cool thing about it is when you watch these, it's English, but with the Japanese subtitles.
Right.
And they look great. The packaging looks great. And I just love the fact, too, that Highlander 2, The Quickening is the original version. It's not the Renegade version, which I like. But I wanted to put a shout out to Jill. Thank you so much. That was the sweetest thing anyone could do for me. Really appreciate it. And she said, hey, I'm just helping feed the fandom. And I said, Jill, if there's anything you need from me, let me know. But she was very sweet. She took the time to do it. And they weren't very expensive when you do the currency exchange from the dollars to yen.
Yeah.
But I just want to say, Jill, thank you so much. You're very, very sweet. And you just totally fed my fandom in a major, major dorky way with Highlander. Yeah. So thank you.
She's a straight up rock star. I love Jill. Yeah.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is. So before we head on out of Joe's, Norm, you know what time it is?
Is it that time?
It is that time. I get to test Norm's
oh, God.
Immortal wisdom.
Oh, these are tough, man. You're getting up there with these.
Okay. I have two to choose from here. Which one? You know what? I'm going to do this one.
You know, it's funny. Like this one right when I used to work on Trek FM for Standard Orbit, we had Jeffrey Harlan, a good friend of mine. We called him Mr. Atos because it referenced an episode, Mr. A to Z. That guy's trivia was unparalleled, and it terrifies me to death when you ask me these questions. Because I'm no Mr. Atos.
Well, I the reason why I do this is not to just have fun with you, but the listeners that are listening along, I like to challenge them as well, you know. So when they hear this going, I want them to go, oh gosh, maybe I know, and they play along with you. So that's why we do this.
And God's honest truth, I don't know any of these questions coming up. I swear to God. I swear
no,
to
he
God.
Does not.
Nope.
He does not. And that's why I have so much fun doing this. Okay, I think this is an easy one. So
we'll see.
And it's we touched on this character in a previous episode. So there's a
is that my hint?
A tip to that. What's that? That's a semi-hint.
Okay.
And I will let you know this person is a male.
Okay.
Okay. You ready?
Ready.
All right. This immortal was born in Boston, Massachusetts in 1834. He grew up in a northern state, meaning that he was a free man. At the age of 27, this immortal enlisted with the 54th Regiment in the Massachusetts Volunteers, commanded by Robert Gould Shaw, a white officer. This immortal hoped to fight in the defense of his brothers and sisters, still enslaved in the Confederate States of America, and for the preservation of the Union. At 29, this immortal died in battle and became immortal. He was then taught about his immortality by his commanding officer, Shaw, who was also immortal. This immortal became a professional soldier fighting in the wars, including both World Wars, Korea, and Vietnam. This immortal became cynical and suffered years of racism, frustrating him since the end of the Civil War. He thought that African-American people would be free and have equal rights. But in between the wars, he watched from the sidelines as equality wasn't happening. He soon came to the conclusion that only in war he would find equality. Who is this immortal?
Wow, that's a tough one. Okay, so he... Glory, the Edward Zwick movie with Matthew Broderick and Denzel Washington is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Oh, good movie.
Yes, great movie, right?
Yes.
So he fought with the 54th Massachusetts? Was that it?
Yes.
Okay, so,
yes.
So according to Glory, the 54th Massachusetts was one of the first colored regiments in the Civil War. So that's, Civil War, right?
Yes.
Okay. You said that Robert Gould Shaw was immortal?
Commanding Officer Shaw, who was immortal, yep.
So when they went against Fort...
Robert Gould Shaw, a white officer, yep.
So Robert Gould Shaw died at the end of Glory when they fought Fort... Oh, I can't remember the name of it, though. So that's when he would become immortal.
Dude, you're dropping some serious knowledge. I love
it. I love Glory. Yeah, it was Fort... it was like Fort McHenry or something like that. But it was in South Carolina. The 54th hasn't slept in like days. It was a great soliloquy by Matthew Broderick. So Matthew Broderick is now immortal.
That's one way to look at
it.
Bueller.
Bueller.
Are you immortal?
So you have someone who is an African-American. He fought with the 54th. Give him hell, 54. And fought racism, fought slavery, fought for the cause. I would have to guess that this immortal is no other than Carl Robinson, played by Bruce Young.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely sure.
You are incorrect.
Really?
Yes.
Really? Oh, wait.
I will give you a clue.
Okay.
He was in the episode Brothers in Arms.
No. Cord?
Yes, Andrew Cord.
Was he really?
Wow, I stumped you. Wow.
That was awesome. I was thinking Carl Robinson on the way because like the whole race.
No, thing. this was Joe's commanding officer.
In Vietnam. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Sergeant Cord.
Yes. That is Andrew Cord. Yes.
Awesome, dude. I love it. Played by Wolfgang Bodison, I believe. Was it?
Yes, Wolfgang Bodison brilliantly played.
Yeah, that was a great role of his. I think he got that role right after he did. What was that? That was what was that movie with Jack Nicholson? You Can't Handle the Truth.
A Few Good Men. Men.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, he wasn't he the one that gave the code red? I think it was.
Yeah, he was the one that didn't salute. Tom Cruise, and very end, he like saluted. He's like, salute. Right. He's an officer in the room, but yeah, nice one, dude. Nice one.
Yes. Yeah. And he was his occupation was an arms dealer. So brilliantly played, of course. And then of course, deceased, beheaded by Duncan MacLeod in 1995.
Outstanding. So. Also killed Charlie DeSalvo.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I want to do an episode on Charlie.
Oh, totally, nice. Dude. Totally.
He definitely deserves it.
Well done. I was totally sold on Carl just because of the whole racism thing. But yeah, well done. That was great.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, what do you say we head on out of Joe's? Let me finish up these cheese here and look over at that section that, Michael Christian has still for some reason.
Let's get out of here.
What do you say we head on out of Joe's,
Let's
bro?
Get out of here, man. Get to the matter at hand.
All right, Norm, here we are. Blood of Kings, episode 25. This is the Search for the Raven Part 2. Episode is called Reborn as the Raven.
Yep.
Now, before we go into this, I thought I would read the opening monologue that you hear when you listen to or you are watching the episode of Raven, voiced by Paul Johansson. Mm-hmm. She is immortal, 1,000 years old, and she cannot die. A creature of legend, like the Raven, a thief who stole the sun and the moon. They sent a warrior to bring her back. He found her, and together they brought light to the world. I was a cop. To me, she was just a thief. Another day on the job. But she wasn't. She changed my life. Changed everything. And both of us knew from that moment on, nothing would ever be the same.
Well done.
So here we are. We are talking about the spinoff series, The Raven, starring Elizabeth Grayson as the Raven. And we talked about in the last episode the trial episodes, the audition
episodes. The audition
episodes,
and yet, yeah.
Yet they decided to go with someone that they knew and they loved, Elizabeth Grayson, as the Raven, man.
You know what's funny is that when I hear this opening, and in retrospect, thinking about the opening of Highlander that happened pretty much from season one, but got polished from season two onwards, like, you know, his name is Duncan MacLeod. He was born in 1592 in the Highlands of Scotland. And he is not, you know, the whole Joe Dawson opening. It feels a lot like what they do with, like, the CW now with, like, the Arrow and the Flash. You know, yeah. Like, my name is Oliver Queen, or my name is Barry Allen. I think it was neat that you get a little bit of this retcon kind of story. I say retcon because the whole Raven aspect was an element that was added into this show, but not necessarily part of Amanda's character per se.
Let me ask you about that. Do you think it was just to give it its own, because they, to call something Highlander, you actually have to have a Highlander from Scotland, I guess, so to speak. So to add the Raven into it, but to remind the fans that it is about the immortals of the Highlander series, is it to give it its own identity? Let's pick something cool that sounds cool and, you know, based on some type of history or lore or, you know, story.
I think so. I mean, let's take a look at the intro monologue. She is immortal, 1,000 years old, and she cannot die. I mean, that says enough. A creature of legend like the Raven. I don't know about that. Like a thief who stole the sun and the moon, they sent a warrior to bring her back. I mean, you saw a lot of that stuff in the opening credits where that kind of, you know, dictates where Nick Wolff comes in. Am I jumping forward?
No, you're good.
Okay. So, gosh, I so many feelings. I don't know exactly how I feel about this still, because it didn't get a chance to evolve. So we're dealing with the pilot episode, Reborn, episode one of The Raven. And we hear this monologue, and does it give us enough backstory or legend or lore to add the gravitas of this character or not? I don't know. I still don't know.
The other question I want to put out there too, were they adding another facet to Amanda's character, or were they kind of fabricating a little too much that might not fit Amanda? That's another question we could put out there
Well, I think before we jump onto this, I think let's recap a little bit as to why The Raven as a series was conceived, why this had to happen.
Yes. Okay, so we'll recap last week's episode, the Highlander 6 audition episodes that we touched on here. They decided that they wanted a spinoff. I think it was the USA Network. They wanted a companion show to La Femme Nikita and a couple of the other shows. And, of course, Adrian Paul wanted to do other projects. Move on from Highlander. I know you wanted to do movies, and there was the Highlander, you know, movie as well. And also, he was he had a shoulder injury, and I think he didn't want to be stuck in Highlander for the rest of his life. He wanted to move on and see what else that he could do.
Now, I want to interject here. In the special features where we're referencing, when you heard Bill Panzer talk about Adrian Paul, did you feel that he was a little sore about it because,
oh, yeah.
Because he said something along the lines of, and don't quote me, folks, but this is what I remember.
I know what you're going to say.
He said that Adrian Paul's choice was ill-informed.
He also said that, not quote word for word here, but he said that, you know, Adrian felt that he was a star,
yep.
And he was.
Yep.
And you, and Bill Panzer used the word yet a little delusional.
Well, he said that there's the star of Highlander, and then there's the star outside of Highlander. And he said yeah. that along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing this, that Adrian felt that his stardom of Highlander would translate outside of Highlander.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's fair
yeah,
to say.
Yeah. And I think that Bill Panzer disagreed with that.
Yeah. And I think that in these interviews, like, you know, everyone's being honest, but I still think at the end of the day that Bill and Adrian are still okay. You know?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, but if you watch the Highlander season 6 special features on a lot of these on these audition episodes starring these female leads, both David Abramowitz and Bill Panzer comment on Adrian's season 6 performances and his availability. They talk about his star power and him wanting to move on to take a shot at the movies and other projects. And so it's interesting, you know, at the time. I'm sure they were probably disappointed, too, that Adrian did not want to continue. They did. I think deep inside they wanted to make sure that, you know, that he was happy, and they wanted to end the show and find a new star to carry on the Highlander torch, sort of speak. And, you know, obviously they didn't want to have another McLeod because right. that would disrespect Adrian and his character and also insult the fans too. I don't think that was the right thing to do. I think that we should talk about the Raven Disc 1 special features when you get the DVD. Because they talk about the end of the Highlander series, and it was called Highlander Confidential, The Unraveling of the Series. Bill Panzer said that Adrian was looking for broader horizons and didn't want to be stuck in the Highlander forever, and he wanted to take a shot outside the series. So he decided to take the 13 episodes of Season 6 to help cast the spinoff show, and Adrian was only going to appear in about half of those. Mm-hmm. I thought this was an interesting special to have on the Raven series DVD, but I think it was essential to explain why we are watching the Raven in the first place.
Right. And I think that a lot of the listeners, if you haven't listened to our previous episode, that would have been episode 24. That we covered a lot of the actual episodes that all these different actresses were tried out for the Raven, but eventually and ultimately, it went to Elizabeth Grayson. So in this episode, our episode 25, we want to talk about this, the casting choices moving forward and what the, you know, Bill Panzer and Peter Davis and the production companies, you know, Reicher and Gaumont and USA Network wanted to go with. Because let's put this in the bottom line. The bottom line is that this is a product, right?
Yes.
Right. And Highlander is a license. So I hate saying this in so many like draconian terms, but you have to be able to create a product and make the license create a monetary value of this product. So where did they go from their auditions? Because they auditioned over 30 women to spin off the show. Five or six made it actually into the broadcast of season 6. Half of season 6 was dedicated to trying to find the right one, and yet they didn't find the right one. And they went with, you know, and it's a strange thing, but they invested all that time and money and calling in people and trying out actresses. But in the end, they went with our fan favorite, one of the fan favorites and one of the actresses who is easily identifiable in the Highlander lore, and that's Elizabeth Grayson as Amanda. I don't understand they didn't just start using her in season 6 in the first place.
Yeah, you know, possibility, I think we touched on a little bit in the last episode, was her availability wasn't there. She was doing some other stuff, other shows, movies. So maybe they thought that they couldn't get her to commit to it, and so they had to look elsewhere. And then I think her availability, when she was approached, came, you know, clear. But, you know, that's something that I don't know when the ending of the show was definitely confirmed, but it's interesting that they didn't look to their own first, because that's what you do when you have a spinoff of a show. I mean, like Cheers, you had Frasier. Frasier was there.
Right.
You know, you didn't look anywhere else, you know?
Exactly.
You know, Joni Loves Chachi. You know,
you're
not going to bring in people you don't know into the Happy Days world. You know, you're going to go with Joni and Chachi, yeah. Right? Because they were popular.
Why Ralph Malph didn't get his own series, I don't know. But you're,
exactly,
but you're right. Like Three's Company did The Ropers. You know, yeah, you had. Are we dating ourselves? I think we are.
Yes, The Ropers, yeah, dude.
The Ropers,
yes.
Right? Yeah, Norman Fell, loved him. No, but you're right.
Yes,
you don't know why you didn't go inside, right? You know, why you didn't go inside the lore, inside the, you know, the family, if you will.
Exactly. So, well, it made for some interesting storytelling. Of course, there was a lot of powerful female characters in the 90s that were on the rise. You had Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Xena Warrior Princess, La Femme Nikita. As we mentioned before, USA was looking for a companion show. The interesting thing here, too, is they needed to see immortality from a female perspective, especially with the issue of not having children is concerned and the power of the maternal instinct.
Yeah, we saw that with Katya. You know, we saw that with Katya's
yes.
episode Justice in season 6 and how it was a struggle for her to go from mother to friend, to girlfriend, to, you know, it was just a strange thing. But I thought that was like the most compelling part of that story.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think that given the chance, too, and there was a little bit dabbed into the Raven, complete series, which is one season, I think that they would have gone into that a lot more. So Amanda is chosen. She appeared in 16 episodes of the original series. She had a built-in audience. She knew all the producers, the actors, the investors. They all loved her. And Bill Panzer even said that the existing popular character of Amanda felt like a strong choice with many benefits. And then, of course, we have Paul Johansson, who was cast as the male lead. Mm-hmm. He had the look right. He had the right look. He was handsome. And he enjoyed the pitch by Marla Ginsburg, David Abramowitz, Peter Davis, and Bill Panzer, about a former cop who, gets involved with a 1,000-year-old immortal. To me, that sounds great.
You know, on paper, it sounds like everything is going well. You know, you have Elizabeth Grayson, you know, who has the history with the production company. She comes in and she's like the logical choice to be able to bridge the gap between the original series and the Raven. And then, you know, Paul Johansson coming in as Nick Wolf, you know, he's like the new character. And the Nick Wolf character is something that we saw in Two of Hearts, where Claudia Christian played Catherine and then another actor, I can't remember his name, he played Nick Wolf. So you had that dabbled into a little bit, and now it's kind of like finally coming to fruition. But it all worked out on paper, like I said. You know, it seemed like everything just worked out right on the script, but from script form to execution to TV form to final production, those are completely different leaps and bounds, you know. There was
challenges getting to the Raven in the production. Elizabeth Grayson was having some personal issues with the pressure from a psychopath from a relationship she was in at the time.
And those are her words.
Also,
those are her words from the special features. We're not elaborating on that. Those are her words.
Yes. If you watch the special features, she goes into detail about that. Yeah. And then she had talked about, being under fire from the President Clinton impeachment trials. She's being tracked down by Ken Starr and his lawyers. So she was going through a tumultuous time personally.
Yeah.
And I think in this way, too, that getting this series in a way also helped her because it was shot out of country as well. So she got to get away from all that. But what I found interesting, too, was that when Abramowitz was approached from Gaumont, they wanted him to take a severe pay cut because the production company overextended their assets by buying a bunch of movie theaters and couldn't afford Davis's pay rate.
I love him when he talked about this in the special features because he's like, that's not my problem. That's your problem.
Yes, right? Exactly.
Like
so wait a minute. He kind of left it off. Do you think then that means he did get paid what he was expecting then?
Well, let's dial this back for a second. I want to talk about Elizabeth Grayson and her situation just for a little bit more. So Bill Panzer wanted Elizabeth Grayson to be Amanda. He wanted her to reprise the Amanda role. She was in a relationship that was very toxic at the time, and she was under a very serious amount of pressure. Like, we're talking about like serious government pressure. Like, you know, we're talking, you know, Ken Starr, the interrogation that was happening with the Bill Clinton impeachment of the late 90s. All this while she's trying to like understand if she wants to go on and be the successor of this TV show. I can't even imagine the pressure that she was under at the time.
No, I can't even.
You know, so there's that happening. And then, okay, so you have David Abramowitz. Now, David Abramowitz being the principal showrunner of Highlander from mid-season one all the way to the end of season six, he's like, so what's my role in this again? What do you want me to do? And how much are you going to pay me? So when we go into the credits of the very first pilot episode, we're not dealing with the same team. And it feels like we're not dealing with the same team. And that's something that's disconcerting to the fans, because fans know directors, writers, producers, actors, actresses, everyone who's involved in a production. And when they see people that are changed in principal roles, that's very concerning to audiences trying to follow the episodes. You know the kind of audiences that we're dealing with, you know?
Yeah. It's... It's interesting, you know, you see some similar names and then you see a bunch of different ones. And, you know, when you see the first episode, you can kind of get a feel for that. But they did have veteran director Dennis Barry come back. And I'm not sure how many episodes of the Highlander series he did, but he did quite a ton.
A ton.
I mean, he's the guy you want to have at, you know, probably another Highlander convention because of his experience and his shooting style, and you know, and they liked the way that he did it, and you know, he liked the series as well. But he said that he described Highlander the Raven as a midlife crisis of a series, no longer the hard edge rock and roll of the original series. And we'll kind of get into that a little bit more when we start talking about the pilot episode here. Which, what do you say we get into that?
You know, the pilot episode of the Raven. Now, this is. It's funny that they didn't like use this storyline to try and test the actresses in season six, because the pilot episode, Reborn, was directed by somebody outside of the Highlander franchise. His name is Ian Toynton. The writer was outside the Highlander franchise. Her name was Karen Harris. So you're not dealing with a Dennis Barry or a Boris Clay or Clay Boris, and you're not dealing with writers like, you know, Richard Martin or James Thorpe. You're not dealing with the normal crowd. And once you kind of reconcile that, it feels different. It seems different. And on the screen, it actually feels different. So, yes, things change. I understand that. Things change and you go in different directions. But sometimes you want to bring in teams that allow you to usher in a transitional phase so that the change isn't so jarring. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to talk about with this pilot episode, Reborn, is that I think the change was just jarring. What do you think, Kev?
Agreed. And we'll touch base on that. But first, I think we should give a brief synopsis on the plot so we can kind of set the stage for these changes.
Yeah.
The immortal Amanda Montrose has gone back to her thieving ways, as being investigated by the police when she is framed for the murder of one of her brokers. With the help of officers Nick Wolf and Claudia Hoffman, she attempts to clear her name and find out who set her up. So she's set up for the murder. And what's interesting is that the plot sounds cool, but we have to ask. There's a couple of things that this that this episode did not have, and I think we should touch on those now. Mm-hmm. First of all, there was no sword fighting.
Right.
There was no quickening.
Right.
And I don't think there was a flashback.
Nope, no flashback.
So here you got in Highlander episode, the three things that every episode should have and what is iconic about Highlander. Instead, it kind of came across as kind of like a detective film noir type episode. And it's setting up the characters, especially Nick Wolfe, who is part of the police force, but then there's some corruption and his partner is killed. Mm-hmm. He quits the force, and then eventually that sets up the stage for what will become his relationship with the Amanda character. His partner that's killed is Claudia Hoffman, played by Tori Higginson, which I didn't realize she was in the Stargate Atlantis.
Yeah, big deal.
Series,
big deal.
Correctly. Yes. Yep. Yeah. I really liked her in that. So it's set up because one of the cops that he trusted was one of the killers, or was the killer,
right?
If I remember correctly. And so he quit the force and kind of then eventually went out, I guess, on his own as like a private investigator, I guess. Mm-hmm. Eventually is what he was. But the show didn't have the three big things. It didn't open up that way. When you introduce a Highlander TV series, this is something I think that you need to have. Norm, what's your take on that?
It's an interesting thing. When I watch this for the first time, I'm like, okay, so you're right. Where is the sword fighting? Where's the quickening? Where's the flashback? Let's go all the way back to 1992 when they did the Gathering pilot. Okay. So Highlander hasn't been seen on the small screen ever. Right. And Highlander, the very first episode, The Gathering, had Connor McLeod, which actually was a huge thing. And it had flashbacks. It had sword fights. It had, you know, immortality. It had the struggle. It had drama. It had everything that you needed. And it had romance. It had everything that was stereotypical of a Highlander story. Why they did not have a crossover character in this episode is beyond me. Whether it was Duncan, whether it was Adrian, or whether it was Peter as Mythos, or whether it was Jim as Joe. Okay. Any of those characters would have sufficed for any kind of crossover element to smooth over the fact that you're still in the same universe. The issue that I had with it, Raven, and it's not anything in particular from the acting or from the production or from any of that. It's about the bridging of the two, I guess the two fandoms in a way. You know, you had the Highlander, the series fandom, and now you had this new one. You have to be able to smooth that over, or else, you know, why am I watching this? You know, what's the point? So I guess in the Reborn pilot episode, I didn't feel immediately that I knew where I was. Why do I care? And why do I think that this is part of the Highlander lore per se?
Yeah. It's interesting because, I felt that there was, I'm going to jump forward a little bit here. There was things that you got out of the second episode. First of all, the second episode called Full Disclosure, and I'm getting to a point here when it comes to the pilot episode, you did get your Evil Immortal, you got your Quickening, you got the sword fight, of course, and then you got the Full Disclosure is called because that's when Nick Wolfe finds out the history of Amanda. Why not combine those two into one? Because I think if it was written that way, to where you got the kind of cop drama in the beginning, but then you got them all together, I think that it would have been a much better way. Because I think if anyone saw this first episode, they may not have tried to watch the second one after the first one if they were used to the regular Highlander TV series.
Right.
Because it does come across as a film noir type cop episode, a kind of a whodunit capery type thing, you know. And this is the type of episode you throw in later on when you've already set up your characters, you know. But the second episode, I think, is much more satisfying because you get those things. And I don't know the decision making behind that, but I can understand that. That was a huge hurdle they put up right in front of viewers right away.
Well, let's focus on what they did right. I mean, you know, Elizabeth Grayson as Amanda is perfect. She knows the character, right? And I think that it was probably a smarter choice to go with her as the Raven character than, say, an Alex Raven or a Kira or a Katya or a Catherine. I think that if they didn't hit the pilot right, it probably wouldn't have resonated with the fans. But since Elizabeth Grayson as Amanda was in that role, no matter how rocky the start was, at least it was her in that role.
Yeah, seeing her in the thief role was very fun because that's something that we saw in the original Highlander TV series.
Right.
And making her escape and always having a way out, you know, when she escaped her, when she was, you know, going to be arrested by Nick and the police officers for the murder she was being framed for. You know, seeing her make her run and little things. It was just totally Amanda was back. You could definitely see that. And Elizabeth Grayson just did that really, really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, she slipped into her character with such ease, you know. And you said this, you know, when she was at the Lakeland convention, you know, she slipped back into Amanda with such ease. She knows this character. And I think that's one of the reasons why that, you know, like Bill Panzer and Peter Davis and the producers at Gaumont and Reicher and USA, they were like, okay, I can sell you this. I can sell you that Elizabeth Grayson is going to be the true successor. Because when you think about it, take a look at the pantheon of characters that could have succeeded Highlander. You had Joe and Mythos. You had Peter and Jim. Yes, that would have been fun. But they didn't want to go that route. They wanted to go with the route of a female immortal. They wanted to stick with kind of like, you know, the female empowered characters at the time. You know, you had Buffy the Vampire Slayer, like you said before. You know, you had Dana Scully. You know, you had La Femme Nikita. So all of these women are starting to take really like proficient and prominent roles in fandom. So why not her? And I think she did a great job. Unfortunately, I just don't think that the choices that they made for the script really allowed you to understand Highlander. Okay, so Highlander isn't just a name. Highlander is a way of thinking. It's not just like a regional, you know, a regional description, you know, like someone from the Highlands of Scotland. Highlander is a brand. You know, Highlander means immortality, you know, rock and roll, sexiness, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it's not just, you know, it's like you're from the Highlands of Scotland. No, you're a certain demographic. You're a certain descriptor. When you think of Highlander, you think of this. And unfortunately, I don't think that the pilot delivered on that.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. And now there could be some case made for the choice of her co-stars. Mm. Some people have talked about that. I think Nick Wolfe in general, I thought was a good casting by Paul Johansson. Mm-hmm. The character itself, I thought was good, but I want to talk about her other co-stars. Lucy Becker, played by Patricia Cage, Amanda's confidant, roommate, sometimes her alibi. Someone that it was a character that Amanda had met many, many, many years ago, I think during World War II. And maybe in the first couple of episodes, you know, she was kind of spunky. She was funny. But I don't know if it translated as well as it could have. That could have been another thing. But the idea of having a fellow female person character to bounce off of, and especially someone that had history with it, kind of like the way Connor did. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting her name.
Rachel.
Rachel from World War II. I think the idea was sound, but I don't know if it translated well enough through the series or not. But not having like another person closer to her age or someone that could rough and tumble with her or something. I don't know. What do you think about the character of Lucy Becker?
Well, season ones, I kind of categorize as a growing season, and nowhere. Well, you know, let's be fair to what we're talking about here. We're only talking about the pilot. So Lucy was an interesting character because she was Amanda's conscience, if you will. You know, she always kind of like added that moral equation to Amanda's decision-making process. And I think that probably would have gotten better over time.
You're right.
And I think that would have grounded Amanda a lot, especially if we had that Band of Brothers moment where perhaps Lucy and Amanda had a really good confrontation about what Amanda's decisions were being accounted to. You know, I just think that one season, one pilot, it wasn't just enough to be able to inform the characters of what they had the potential of becoming. You know, right, and I think that it's tough to speculate, but I think that Lucy would have been a really good foil for Amanda in the same way, like, say, in the Highlander anime, The Search for Vengeance, you know, where, that demon spirit in his hand, you know, was kind of like talking to him, you know, it's like, I'm thinking Vampire Hunter D, but the demon spirit that was talking, the demon spirit that was talking to Colin, you know, he always like, you know, think about things in a different way. You know, you don't have to think about things in the immortal way. Think about things in the mortal way. Think about things in realistic terms. I think that Lucy would have been somewhat along the lines of Joe in that sense.
Right. Yeah. Well, I did want to borrow again from the great John Mosby, Fearful Symmetry. There's a good paragraph here real quick on Lucy that I think is really, that kind of describes it all in a nutshell. In and out of orphanages at the age of 14, Lucy was on her own. For a mortal, she led many lives. She speaks 6 or 7 languages, has been married 3 times, the last one at the age of 23. This final husband, her true soulmate, was Marcus Skaya, an immortal and a gypsy whom she loved deeply. With Marcus, she learned to ply a number of somewhat illegal but entertaining trades. It was at this time that she met Amanda, an old friend of her husband. So that kind of gives a little background on Lucy. And you're right. I think that given time, that character would have been fleshed out a lot more. So
yeah, and you had the opportunity to go like into the lore of Highlander. Like Amanda can still be like, you know, searching the Methuselah Stone. So much potential.
No, oh, yeah, totally. Now, the one character that I really did like that I would love to have seen a lot more grow later on is the character of Basil Morgan, Amanda's fellow immortal information broker friend, played by great character actor Julian Richings. Mm-hmm. And it says here in Fearful Symmetry by the great John Mosby, Basil Morgan, late 20s, hip Cockney Basil, is an immortal who has known Amanda for 150 years. And that I think is interesting right there. They met both through their mutual interest, mainly petty theft. Basil is now a fence not to be trusted, using a Chinatown pawn shop as a cover. He has charm and spunk, though he has a tenacity to complain a bit. Rumor is that Charles Dickens fashioned the artful dodger after him.
Yeah, I love that description. I love that description. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that was cool. And then there was another character, Bert Myers. Bert is in his 30s, a former Fed, now running his own security firm. He is a big bear of a man with a voracious appetite. He adores his family and would just as soon let someone else do the hard work. That's when he turns to Nick Wolfe and that crazy broad he sometimes hangs out with. And we discover that Myers may be more than he seems. So...
you know, somewhere along the lines, Kev, you and I are going to have to tackle the Raven as a series, like in earnest.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
But, yeah, definitely.
But for
definitely.
Reborn, you know, for this particular episode, it's a really interesting thing what everyone was trying to accomplish with this episode. I mean, you had Elizabeth Grayson, and she looked spectacular. Spectacular.
Yeah.
In this.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, she was God, she's gorgeous, you know. And
Amanda is back, you know.
It's Amanda, you know. We you know, all the way from like Lady and the Tiger to the Return of Amanda to the Cross of Saint Antoine to Methuselah's Gift, you know. Amanda has great stories. She was in 16 episodes of Highlander. That's 16.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very significant amount of storytelling for a character. And I think that along those lines, you know, all the way back from Lady and the Tiger, we knew that she was a thief. You know, she was somebody who was like really, really good at manipulating people, especially Duncan, from time to time. So that didn't change in her character in The Raven. I don't think The Raven itself is a weird forced concept. And I think that's something that we need to talk about like maybe later on. But it's just something that, you know, somebody that stole the sun and the moon and blah, blah, blah. I think that probably would have worked better in concept if they were able to work the entire production around that. Keeping Elizabeth Grayson in her incredibly gorgeous brunette locks. You know, the dark locks that she had in,
right,
you know, in Legacy or in To Be and Not to Be when she was in that dark, you know, the dark hair. But that wasn't to be, you know. So it's hard to say where Reborn and the rest of the series would have gone past, say, the initial season, because she is so good. She knows Amanda. Amanda is her. And you were there at the 30th anniversary convention in Lakeland, Florida, and you saw in your heart and in your eyes what she can do with Amanda to this day.
Yes, when she and Adrian did her written project, Love Letters, which roughly took place 10 years after the end of the series, with Amanda and Duncan writing letters back and forth in the day of, you know, Skype and all of this electronics for him, and seeing them fall back instantly in these characters, and especially Elizabeth just being Amanda again, it brought goosebumps to my arms and chills down my spine in a good way. It was great.
I want to ask you a question, though.
Well,
let's go all the way back to, since we're focusing on the pilot episode, and we're going to do The Raven in general, you know, later on. Paul Johansson, what did you think of him?
I liked him, but I think he grew on me a little bit more. I liked Paul Johansson before, because I've seen him in other series. I saw him in One Tree Hill later on, I like him. I thought he was a good looking guy and he was a strong presence. But you know, the first episode I was kind of like, but it wasn't until like, you know, the second or third episode, is where he started to really grow on me. Of course, that's normal for, you know, any TV show that you watch. There's probably, you gravitate towards one character over the other. And of course, Amanda was the person that I gravitated more. So what about you? What's your thoughts on Paul?
I liked Paul a lot because I think that he had the physicality that I wanted in a character. And forgive me, listeners, for I don't remember who the actor is, and I should really look him up, if, you know, who played Nick Wolfe in Two of Hearts. But I think that Paul Johansson and Claudia Christian would have been really good together as a team. You know, they just have that strength. They have that sense of presence, you know, in their characters. But I really liked him. I thought he was tough. You know, he was a good, tough, cop-like character. He had a lot of athleticism. He had a lot of strength. I guess it's hard to say, like, where his character would have ended up. We know where he ended up at the end of the series, you know, with the first episode being Reborn and the end of the series being Danged on Arrival. Gosh, it's really hard to speculate because I would have liked to have seen The Raven gone 5, 6, 7 years. And I think that Paul Johansson was strong. He was a good actor and he was good looking. And I think he brought a lot to the role.
The actor, by the way, is Stephen O'Shea.
Stephen O'Shea. Okay.
Who played the character of Nick Wolfe in the Two of Hearts episode,
okay,
with Claudia Christians.
Right.
Yeah. Well, one thing I did want to mention was that, you know, we'll cover the Raven more in a future episode, but we did get the return of Joe. He came later on. I think it was in episode 12 or 13.
Yeah.
So we did get that. I got to tell you, though, it would have been nice to see Adrian come back and make a guest appearance as Duncan in one of the Raven episodes.
Okay.
That would have been cool.
So let's put this into kind of like what the way things were going on at the time. So around that time, Star Trek, The Next Generation, was going into Deep Space Nine. And in the pilot episode of Deep Space Nine, you had Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard. That's a big guest starring appearance, but you needed that to be able to translate the one series to another from The Next Generation into Deep Space Nine. I think that it would have really helped the transition from Highlander the series into Highlander the Raven if you had at least one major acting character just bridge that. And I think that either Mythos, Joe, definitely Duncan would have helped. I think that Mythos or Joe, I think Joe especially being a washer, would have been really interesting at the very opening of that. Especially since, like, they could have written it like Amanda's like, I don't know who I'm dealing with. I don't know, like, this person's immortal. You know, Joe, can you help me out here? And it's always awesome that when Amanda pries Joe, you know, kind of like in The Colonel with Simon Killian, you know, the way that she kind of like worked. That's right. I pulled that from memory. I'm awesome. But the way that she pried that information from Joe, even though that Joe and Duncan weren't on speaking terms, to be able to help Duncan out. I think that just Jim Burns and Elizabeth Grayson were always on screen great together, you know, and I think that would have helped out.
And I do want to give a little tease to the fans and listeners who maybe have not watched The Raven or given it a shot. But you do also see the return of a certain Four Horsemen. You see Valentine Pelka, who played Kronos in season 5, Comes a Horseman. He returns in a 2-part episode, Matter of Time and French Connection. That's Matter of Time is one where Joe Dawson comes in, where he plays an immortal called Andre Korda. But what's interesting about these episodes is this is the episodes that Amanda Elizabeth Grayson learned the art of the flying rainbow fan, which what. The class that Elizabeth Grayson taught us as we took her course at the Highlander 30th Anniversary Convention, the Tai Chi / fan thing that she used in the episode. So just a little tease there. Kronos, so to speak, returns.
So it's interesting that in The Raven, like looking at the pilot episode and looking at the way that everything shaped up, I think that in a way, Highlander tried its best to continue, but I think that also in a certain way that there was maybe a vision that was lost. Maybe there was a direction that wasn't really quite adhered to. Maybe there was a continuity Bible that wasn't quite created to move forward with that. So as much as I loved this episode, Reborn with the Raven, gosh.
Hey, hold on. Before you answer that question, because I want to put you on the spot.
Okay,
here.
Okay.
I love doing this, okay? So basically, before we wrap up this episode, we're going to ask each other, how did the pilot episode make you feel about the franchise, okay? But I want you to take a little step back in time, because as I mentioned in the last episode, I did not really catch on with the Highlander TV series until they hit DVD soon after, maybe a year after the release or the ending of the TV series.
Okay.
And they came out every couple of months, season 1, season 2. And so that's how I dove into Highlander TV series.
Right.
You, however, were watching it live when they came on. Okay.
Yeah.
So I want you to answer this question. When you were watching, I'm assuming you were watching The Raven when it first aired.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How did you feel then after watching the first episode, and how do you feel now?
There was a great level of uncertainty. I mean, I have to be honest.
Going into yeah. it before you saw
no,
it?
No, watching it.
Okay.
And I think it's because I think that it just strayed away too much from the Highlander lore. I really wish that Adrian was in that episode just to bridge that continuity. Because continuity right. to fans is a huge thing. And
agreed. That's a good point.
Right. And I think that, I mean, Adrian, like, he entertained being involved with every single Raven tryout except for Two of Hearts, except for Claudia Christian. So he was there with Alex Raven and Katya and Kira and Raven Cole. But he wasn't there for Claudia Christian, which was, you know, what it was. But I think that in a way, if he was there with Elizabeth, because Adrian and Elizabeth have the most perfect chemistry of ever, I think that would have helped legitimize and justify that this was part of the Highlander universe. It's kind of like take a look at what's happening with like the CW today. You have Arrow, you have Flash, and you have Supergirl. But they never rarely, if ever, like, you know, are on screen together. But when they do happen to be on screen together, it legitimizes the entirety of that universe. I think that at that time, even if Adrian made a 10-minute, 5-minute appearance, and if Amanda was having a crisis of faith and said, I need to talk to somebody, I need to clear my head, I need to seek advice. If Adrian became that Darius character on the barge, that would have been huge to the fans.
Okay, so you mentioned last episode that you and Mike would call each other after these episodes.
That's correct. You're right. Me and Mike Sellers.
Did you do that for the Raven? Did you talk to Mike?
Oh, absolutely. We were like, well, I think that the conversation went to kind of like the WTF kind of response. Like, what's going on? Like,
of course, we're talking about Mike Sellers, our fellow Highlander expert and editor of Blood of Kings.
Right. And Mike and I, you know, we've been watching Highlander like, you know, together forever. And we used to call each other at the end of every episode. But at the end of this one, we were like, what's going on? What's happening? Is this the Highlander that we can get behind or get into? And we did, you know, we're stalwart Highlander fans and we got into it, but it got to the point where it was almost that we felt like we were obliged to do it.
Right.
You know, and we are focusing on Reborn. We are focusing on the Highlander Raven pilot, but in the end, when it comes to the overall series, the 22, 23 episodes that was The Raven, you know, we felt sometimes we were obliged to watch just to see if it would get better. And it did. And I think that's unfortunate that it didn't go for another season. But I think that the relationship there between Elizabeth Grayson and Paul Johansson, you can tell even on screen that it was a little strained. But that's a different subject.
Yeah. I was watching it on DVD, obviously for the first time when it came out, and I was intrigued by it. It didn't feel like the Highlander that I was used to. There was Amanda, and I'm like, okay, I'm invested as it is because it's Amanda, and I couldn't get enough of Amanda, and so I marathoned through the whole series, and you know, some were better than others, just like anything else. But honestly, I had this craving at the end, even though I knew there was not any new Raven episodes, hoping that there would be more somehow, because I know that there's the first season growing pains, and it was evident in this season. But I had the urge, and you know, I wanted to see where Nick's character was going to go as well because of the change that his went through. So I, you know, and the way that ended, I kind of had that that feeling you got at the end of Farscape before they went back and did the Peacemaker.
Oh, well done, sir. As we said, okay.
I wanted more, and I was like, maybe they can do a 2-hour episode to kind of wrap things up. Maybe, I don't know, but I knew that wasn't going to happen. But in my head, I was retconning that, you know, of what would happen and stuff. So that's what I was feeling, because I believe in giving if I have an interest or an investment in a series, one of my biggest pet peeves is when networks will cut a show after one season if they've put a lot of money and thought into it. That give it a chance to grow, because there's so many good TV shows that were given that chance and they went on to have huge successes. So yeah, that's where I stood with.
Now you have my oh my God, damn you! Now you have me thinking about Claudia Black with swords.
Yep.
Oh my God. Please.
That would have been awesome, man. Can you imagine her on an episode of Raven?
Yes. Yes, I can. Especially with her jet black hair.
Yes. Gosh. Well, as we wrap this up, man, you got any final thoughts on the pilot episode, Reborn, the Raven?
There are so many thoughts. And we're definitely going to have to dedicate a couple episodes to the series itself. When I think about The Raven and the episodes of that series, but specifically this pilot episode. Pilot episodes are really difficult because they're trying to do so much with so little. And I think that it was smart that they brought back Elizabeth Grayson. I think that if things were different, if she wasn't going through what she was going through, if Paul Johansson wasn't as young as he was and as impressionable as he was, if the production overall was in the right headspace where it needed to be, I actually think that would have probably succeeded as a series. It just didn't happen. And I think that, it's not that what I think, it's actually what I know. In the special features, Elizabeth and Paul and Bill Panzer and writers and people that were involved, they all said that there are just certain circumstances that just led to the demise of the overall project. But I think that if things were different and that you had the kind of the magic that was behind Highlander, the series, I think that the Raven would have stood a chance. I think they had the right ingredients. I think that Elizabeth was perfect as Amanda. I think that was the right choice. I think that Paul Johansson as Nick Wolfe was the right choice. I just think that at the time, it just didn't work for whatever reason. It just didn't. And you could see it a little bit in Reborn. It was strained. You know, you could feel that certain things were strained. But overall, I think that all the elements were right. I just think that they weren't all right at the right time together.
That's a good point. It's interesting because when I was thinking about TV shows that did not get the second series love, there was another Canadian-produced TV series of a property that I love dearly. I'm a huge fan of The Crow, as you know. And
that was with Mark Dacascos, right?
Yes. Crow Stairway to Heaven TV series. And it was done really, really, really well. Much better than the sequels that came out of the movie. And it was a great homage to the original film. They were able to expand on certain characters. And the show ended in a cliffhanger season one and then did not get picked up. And that was one of those series, too, that I had caught on DVD when it finally came out, and I just had the same thing feeling about The Raven. I would love to have seen what would gone. There was so much potential there, and I think that if given the chance, we would be having a different podcast right now.
Well, I think one day, and maybe when Elizabeth is comfortable enough to discuss it, she will give us a little bit more insight past what she said on the DVD special features about her experience with The Raven.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you, Norm. This was fun to talk about Raven. I know this is one of those things that we had targeted way back last year. It's nice to be able to cover all of the Highlander genres and media. And, you know, obviously we've talked about the film, you know, a couple of the films and the anime and obviously the regular TV series, but it's nice to actually touch on the Raven, especially after you know, meeting Elizabeth for the first time, both of us this year, and getting to know her as a person and a friend. And
how lovely is she, though? Really lovely.
So lovely, so sweet, just a genuine, beautiful person. Yeah, definitely. But hey, Norm, we've had a great time talking about the Raven, the Highlander TV series here on the Blood of Kings, but there are other topics that we cover here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We have our Culture Clash weekly show that Kyle and I co-host, our weekly look into fandom news. We cover a lot of stuff, a lot of stuff on Netflix and trailers and movies we've seen, just all the fandom and geekery that we can share with you guys. We do that. We also have the Fandom Flashback. We look back on a popular you know, series, movies, TV series. We covered the year of 1986, which included Highlander, as well as Aliens and a great bunch of other 86 hits, and we're doing 87 as well coming up soon. And of course, Couch Potato Theater, Masters of the Universe, still out there, sounding great. You and Davis Grayson did a great job with that, and what a great property to cover, and also going to be highlighted on the 87 look back on the Fandom Flash.
You know what the toughest is for Couch Potato Theater is, like, the two movies that we're thinking about doing next. It's tough. It's a tough toss up. You have Tron, you know, which is one of them, and the Black Hole.
Yeah, you know what? I touched on this earlier. You know what, to me, the biggest couch potato participant or qualifier is for me? Because I own the DVD and the Blu-ray, yet every time it comes on TV, and it comes on TV all the time, but I will not pick up the Blu-ray or the DVD that I have. I will watch it on TV, and that's Shawshank Redemption.
It's a great movie. It's a great movie.
I think I've watched it more on TV than my home video copies.
Yeah, you know that, or The Green Mile. I mean, I just saw The Green Mile just recently, and I was like, wow, you know, those movies are spectacular. But yeah, Shawshank might be in the list.
Yeah. We have some spotlights, too. We did a tribute to Carrie Fisher. We lost our princess, and we had a great, heartfelt tribute to
her. Have you seen that HBO special of hers?
No, I'm actually, I have that queued up and ready to go. But yeah, it's the one with her and
Debbie.
Her mother, Debbie.
Yeah.
Reynolds, right?
I mean, there are times when you see her, like, her 17 to 20s, like, before she, like, entered Star Wars, and you're like, wow, what a pretty, pretty girl.
Yeah. Yeah, spunky, just full of life. Yeah, yeah.
And her mom is a trooper. Oh my god!
I'm looking forward to seeing. What was that called, by the way? That special?
Brilliant Stars, Bright Stars, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
On HBO. Gotcha. Yeah. The other special we did related. We did our Rogue One reaction show.
I hated that movie.
Which got a lot. You are lying.
I am lying.
Your pants are on
lying.
Fire right
pants
now.
Pants are
lying.
On fire. Rogue One was amazing.
Norm, how many times have you seen it?
I've only seen it two times, but I'm not like, okay, so like let's be fair. Like, I'm not the biggest movie goer. Like, I don't do the movie thing. You do. I know you do, and I know you love it, but after like the third watching, I get what I get out of it. So I might see it one more time, but I actually have listened to the audiobook.
Okay, that's next what I got to do. I got to listen to the audiobook. But, you know, for me, when it comes to Star Wars films, it's after you get invested in the story and the characters, I'm looking at background characters. I'm looking at costume pieces. I'm looking at set pieces. I'm looking at Easter eggs. I'm looking at set design. I just eat up Star Wars film. I have to just get every nook and cranny. I've seen it seven times.
How many times did you see The Force Awakens?
I saw it 30 times in the theater. 30 times.
Amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
30 times, yep. Of course, The End Zone is the other show we have here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We talk Kyle.
Sorry. Sorry.
Kyle and I talk about, we did a season wrap-up special, talked about our teams, and his is, by the time this comes out, we'll find out if his team, the Kansas City Chiefs, have survived the playoffs. My Oakland Raiders did not, but at least they made the playoffs for the first time in like 14 years. So that's good.
Yep.
And Norm's team is guaranteed a first-round
pick. Yes, we are. Browns, first-round pick.
We're going to have some upcoming specials. I'm working on a John Wick special.
Yeah, I'm on that.
Norm, you want to join, yes. me on that?
Yes.
Are you sure? You promise?
I'll bring my own gold coin.
Nice. Yeah, I'll have a dinner reservation for
Thank you. That's right. Oh, wait, not for me.
No, not okay. for you.
Yeah, if John Wick fans know that, it's like don't schedule a dinner reservation for me. Jeez.
That's going to be fun. Right. Of course, you know, the director of John Wick. And if you have not seen John Wick, go see John Wick, please. Can we? It is so good. And I just want to say real quick, Norm, I saw that in the theater when it was released. No one was talking about it until it hit video. And I was telling people, go see this film. And finally, it's caught on video. And with the trailer of the new movie, people are watching it now. This is the resurrection of Keanu Reeves, and he really knows how to use guns.
Yeah, that's his craft. I mean, it's funny that the less dialogue that you give him, but the more action you give him, makes for a better movie.
Oh, agreed. Yeah. Well, here on the Fandom Podcast Network, where you can find Blooded Kings, please search Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for Android users. On Instagram, you can find the Fandom Podcast Network, and you can also find Blood of Kings Pod. Facebook, Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom group. We are around 850 members. Is that
super
right?
Cool? Yeah, yeah. And we would encourage people to share out and to, grow the fandom, just that much more.
I have a goal. I want to try. I think it was one of your goals too. We want to try to hit 1,000 before the end of this year, and I think we can do that even before halfway.
Well, when you think about it, we started this whole thing, the endeavor, around March, April of last year, 2016. So, 850 members by that time, I think we can hit 1,000. You know, in our anniversary, if you will.
Yeah, I hope so. Come on, let's do it. Let's do it. You can email us at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. We love
emails.
Please. Yes. And of course, we will mention them on the show. You can find us on Twitter @bloodofkingspod. You can find me, I'm Kevin, on Twitter and Instagram @Spartan_Phoenix, which, in case you're curious, is a wonderful homage to.
Can I describe that?
Awesome
Can I describe
90s.
That? I know that.
Oh, you want to do it? Okay. What does Spartan Phoenix mean to you?
Well, first of all, if you don't know the three seashells, then you're completely out of the running. Okay. Second of all, Spartan_Phoenix. So you have John Spartan and Simon Phoenix, the principal characters, the two main protagonists of Demolition Man. Am I correct?
Yes. Yes, correct.
So Spartan, John Spartan is Sylvester Stallone, Spartan_Simon Phoenix is Wesley Snipes.
Okay, and who won the fast food wars in the future?
Taco Bell?
Yes! Taco Bell. Yes.
Did Dennis Leary love Taco Bell? I can't remember.
I think so, yeah. He had to steal from Taco Bell, though. That's what he did.
But I will give any listener of Blood of Kings or the Fandom Podcast Network $1,000,000 if you can describe to me what the three seashells mean. That's a bet I know that we'll win.
He doesn't know how to use
the three seashells.
You know what? That I think that's going to be on a couch potato too, because that's one of those things that'll come on. I'll just watch it as well.
So. And there's nothing better in that movie than Sandra Bullock in spandex.
That's right. Before she did Speed.
That's right.
Before
she did
was
Speed, in Demolition Man. Yep.
Norman, where can we find you on Twitter and Instagram?
I don't have nearly like the cool creative name that you have, but...
Oh, come on. Don't sell yourself short, bro.
So I have Starfighter1701. Kevin, would you like to expound upon that?
Dude, you are combining The Last Starfighter, probably one of the coolest 80s films, one of your favorites, and Star Trek.
Yes.
1701, the number on the original Star Trek. Enterprise.
Well done. Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Yes. Well played, sir. You can find our overlord and editor of Blood of Kings, Mike. He's on Twitter @MSELLCNL, MSELLCNL. Norm, what do we want people to do?
Well, what we would like for all of our listeners to do is to leave us a review on iTunes. If you leave us a review on iTunes, it allows us to generate a greater presence there that new fans can find us easier. We love five-star reviews. We've gotten a lot of five-star reviews, and we just love feedback in general. So please, when you go to iTunes, please leave us a review if you haven't done that already, and it will help us just grow in the ratings for Highlander podcasts that are out there in the iTunes universe.
And, you know, we'll read them on the shows.
Absolutely.
Now, so if you want to, if you want to hear your name on Blood of Kings, that's kind of like a fast pass to getting on Blood of Kings right there.
I think that's like a 100% money back guarantee if you do that.
Well, on behalf of my co-host Norman, thanks everyone for listening again, and join us again here next time on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings. Hey, Norman, you know that sensation you're feeling?
I'm going to interrupt that sensation, because the one thing that I want to say because of this episode is that Elizabeth Grayson, we love you and we adore you to pieces.
Agreed. I agree with you so much, Norm. Such a sweetie. Honored to know her personally. And we love you. And Norman, that feeling that you feel, other than the wonderfulness we do in the friendship that we have with Elizabeth Grayson, that is the quickening. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye.